Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Hour. My co-host, Chuck Gregory, won't be with us today due to the death of a close friend, and we'll really be missing Chuck. I will do the best I can. The last time I did this, by myself was from a undisclosed hotel in near Rock Valley, Iowa, and it didn't go very well. We had actually shut the show down that night. I'm coming to you tonight from the basement of our duplex in Cloquet, Minnesota, and if you hear anything from behind me, it'll be my neighbor with his starting up his Harley or his pickup. I think he's a conservation officer at the Fond du Lac Reservation. And my wife Ruth is upstairs. She's trying to be quiet as she always does for this hour, trying to not walk on the stairs up there. But, it was a beautiful day in Duluth, actually. It was 90 degrees. That's kind of a rarity there. There's actually a website called A Perfect Day in Duluth. I'm not in Duluth, actually. I'm in Cloquet, which is about 15 miles south of Duluth. And we got some good news today. We're going to be picked up by Radio Free Nashville. I'm not sure when that'll be starting, but we'll let you know it pretty soon. I want to tell you that we send a newsletter out twice a week to just to promote the different guests. And if you want to get on the list, you can email me at mpalachek. Palachek is P-A-L-E-C-E-K at rconnect.com. Well, today we're going to welcome back Tom Sterner and Sherwood Ross. They've been on the show before. Tom alternates his living between Denver and Redding, California. I guess he's back in Redding tonight. And Sherwood is in Coral Gables, Florida, but tonight he says he's near Washington, D.C. So overall, we're coming to you tonight from Vancouver. That's where Len Osanek is, the producer of the show. Me and near Duluth, Redding, and Virginia. Well, on a drive through Wisconsin last weekend, Ruth, my wife, said, "A dead end is a good place to start." And she was referring to me gawking down a side road that looked particularly desolate and awesome, a great place perhaps to look for Bigfoot. I scrambled for a pen to write that down and couldn't find one, so I just kept repeating it myself through Bayfield and Ashland and the flea market on the highway. A dead end is a good place to start. A dead end is a good place to start. I think it goes well with the idea of a new American dream, actually. You go down this lovely street with nice homes and kids playing, dads grilling, and moms in red print dresses talking to each other over the white picket fence, and then you come to the dead end, the cul-de-sac. And the houses on that dead end circle turnaround are not nice. They are run down. There are car parts and muddy toy bears in the rocky front yard. There's a gunshot and people yelling. There are no sidewalks, no sun, and no hope. There's a young man sitting on a chipped cement front step with a torn army t-shirt with one leg and the barrel of a gun halfway down his own throat. It's an American commercial without the directors and producers and beautiful actors. It's the black and white One Step for Mankind moonshot without the special effects. And I want to return just briefly again to the testimony of astronaut Edgar Mitchell from May of 1998. As always, in search of a peek behind the curtain to see what is really going on. That's kind of really what drives me. I want to know what's going on. The peek that we crave to know the inside news about the JFK assassination, RFK, Martin King, 9/11, the Wellstone assassination, the supposed moon landings, ETs. This is what Edgar Mitchell said in 1998. Until the last 30 years, it was conventional wisdom, both in science and theology, that we are alone in the universe, that we are the whole single repository of life anywhere in the known universe. Well, no one believes that anymore. That changes our concept of who we are and how we fit, and then it's becoming very clear that the way we have conducted ourselves as stewards of life on planet Earth is wanting. We haven't been good stewards. We have been environmental global problems right now that are bringing civilization to a crisis. And people don't want to hear that, but it's slowly becoming obvious that that is true. And so this knowledge of who we are, how we manage a planet, how we fit into the larger scheme of things is a very important question. And he continues, yes, there have been ET visitations. There have been crashed craft. There have been material and bodies recovered. And there is some group of people somewhere that may or may not be associated with government at this point, but certainly were at one time that have this knowledge. They have been attempting to conceal this knowledge or not permit it to be widely disseminated. He continues, I cannot answer who are these people, but there is a lot of evidence that points to what I call a clandestine group, people who have some quasi-affiliation with government and certain government facilities, but operate in a very stealth and secret way that is not generally under high-level government control as far as we can tell. From all that I know, yes, there have been ET visitation and may continue to be. There have been craft that have been recovered. There has been a certain amount of reverse engineering that has allowed some of these craft or some components to be duplicated, and that there are Earthlings who are utilizing some of this equipment in certain ways. He continues, I will stop short of attaching motivation to this. I don't know the motivation, but if it is normal human motivation, it has to do with power and control and greed and money and so forth. The question of has it been kept secret or how could it be kept secret? It hasn't been kept secret. It's been there all along, but it has been the subject of disinformation in order to deflect attention and to create confusion so the truth doesn't come out. Disinformation is simply another method of stonewalling, and that's been used consistently for the last 50 years or so. Weather balloons over Roswell as opposed to a crashed craft of some sort. That is disinformation. We've seen that for 50 years, and that it's the best way to hide something. And that's the testimony of astronaut Edgar Mitchell in May of 1998. And I think it's, you know, it's about ETs, and you may not believe in that or whatever, but I think it's very telling. It has everything to do with why we do this radio show, suggesting, hoping for, asking for, demanding a new American dream, where our lives become based on what we actually thought they always had been. But we have been deceived. We have been fooled into believing in toasters and washers and dryers and television and doodads while letting the real treasure, the real gold, be slipped away by the magicians with their other hands while diverting our attention with trinkets. And I'll let me continue for just a ways more on this. Have you ever felt utterly deserted by people you thought were your friends? You expect the best of people, that they will do the right thing. Then in a crucial moment, they do not. They save themselves, go silent, turn the other way. The phone does not ring. Help does not come. A question remains unanswered. You are amazed. Your jaw drops and you understand more about the world than you ever wanted to. Can you imagine what John Kennedy might have thought in those few split instants after the first shots when he might have figured his friends, the ones all around surrounding him, the Secret Service, FBI, Dallas Police, Americans lining the street, his family would certainly right now be returning fire, making certain this does not happen. And then nothing happens. Nobody moves. They were never your friends. You were always all alone, especially now. And then the final shots ring out. And now let's just go a bit further into the forest looking for Bigfoot, looking for what's real about America in our place, in our time. Another part of the first thoughts of this new American dream we had was that what an absolutely amazing period we are living in, if you think about it. If you study, pay attention, let yourself be curious and go take a look. You know, a part of the original American dream was that with that leisure we would have, with all our toasters and TVs and can openers, since we did not have to spend all day washing clothes, that we would probably do great things. Well, our parents and grandparents dreamed that dream, but left it to us to do something about it. And it's our big chance, our big duty, responsibility. Can you imagine what the Romans, the Greeks might have done with the material we have? Would they have ignored or covered up, or would they have plowed on 24/7 until they figured things out? Hold your open hands in front of your face. They appear empty, but look closer. You hold diamonds and gold. We don't yet know for sure if there are UFOs, ETs, people in outer space, galaxies, all that. And it could be. It really could. How cool would that be? And we don't know for sure if there is a Bigfoot, an actual Bigfoot. I know some may smirk, but if you take a peek, there is so much evidence that it's almost probable, inevitable. And the fact that they have been able to elude discovery just makes this mystery absolutely intoxicating. They might be human. Some sort of long-lost brothers and sisters, it's true. Well, almost. Soon. Maybe soon. And we have long stood on the precipice of acknowledging the plots and cover-ups in the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin King. These are not just parlor games for the nerdy and misfit. They are the keys to the culture, the Rosetta Stone, to understanding who we are. And that is why we do this radio show, Clear and Simple. And then add on 9/11 and Paul Wellstone and the whole secret subculture of our so-called intelligence agencies. What do they really do? Who really rules us? Is Skull and Bones and Illuminati and Bilderberg and Council on Foreign Relations, are they all just weird conspiracy groupie terminology, or might they really tell us something if somehow we could find out? So what do you think? Does it matter what you think? You don't think so, do you? You think you are someone who does not know, who has not had the good fortune to have lived a life where you have come to know. And so that excuses, and it doesn't matter anyway. But your perceptions do matter. It matters what you think. You know more than you think, and you are more powerful than you can imagine. Maybe it's the best we can do to take our perceptions, however limited, pack them in the old Fred Flintstone lunchbox, whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect, I'm afraid. Go out the door and go to work. So here I am, with my lunchbox sitting here open and my jelly sandwich and Oreos on my desk. Here's what I think. The United States of America is not based on the Constitution. The president does not ask anyone before he goes to war, bombing, killing people. It is based rather on the shooting of Jack Kennedy from perhaps as many as 6 vantages in Dealey Plaza. That is the big boom. The big boom theory of the creation of this country. Before that incident, we had a chance to fight poverty and racism and war, get the truth about aliens and UFOs, the truth about whatever. Because before that moment, everything seemed possible, even probable. But after that big boom, the dust bowl clouds of power and greed and violence came out and blotted the sun. The United States of America is not based in the Constitution or the teachings of Jesus. It is based on the collaboration of the U.S. Army, FBI, CIA, and Memphis police to murder Martin Luther King. It is also based on the shooting of Robert Kennedy from behind his ear rather than from the front where Sirhan was standing. You know, we do not make cars much anymore in America, but we do psyops like the Greeks and Romans did philosophy, astronomy, and speeches and literature. These great misdeeds are where we honed our master craft, where those who rule founded this country, where our gears, our tool, and die were cast. The Lorraine Motel in Memphis is our true Plymouth Rock. Dallas's Dealey Plaza is our real Mount Rushmore. The Ambassador Hotel Pantry is our actual Grand Canyon. Waco is our Arlington Cemetery. Oklahoma City is our Yellowstone Park. The woods near Eveleth, Minnesota, where Paul Wellstone's plane went down, is our National Mall. And with the confidence and experience gained in the 1960s, our founding fathers, whoever they are, were able to tack on a Bill of Rights to their version of the Constitution on September 11, 2001. The de facto law and zeitgeist of our great nation is also based in the fact that there was no plane in the Pentagon, no debris, no hole large enough for a plane. There was no plane at Shanksville, just a large hole. There was no plane that hit Building 7, and yet it came down as well. That firefighters and others heard explosions going off in the World Trade Center towers, that it came down in minute dust, and that residue of ultra-explosives had been found in the dust, explosives not available to Osama bin Laden. The power of whoever actually controls the United States is based in those actions, those crimes, secrets, mastermind, wonder of the world events that they were, requiring as much expertise, though not humanity, as the actual Constitution. And the continuing running of this country by those who planned, carried out, and covered up resides in us being afraid. Afraid, first of all, of risking our comfort zone to take the mental leap that our government is capable of these crimes, which it surely is. And second of all, that we will be afraid to seek out the truth and speak on that truth because so many before us have suffered and died as a result of such efforts. But you know and I know, we cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
A belated shout-out tonight from the staff at the New American Dream Radio Hour to Barack Obama for his Nobel Peace Prize. Hey, way to go. We also see from the news ticker wire tonight that Jeffrey Dahmer has been awarded the Nobel Prize for Vegetarianism. Hey, way to go, Jeff. Let's see here, yeah. The Nobel Prize for Parallel Parking goes to the U.S. Monster Truck Association. And the Nobel Prize for Healthcare goes to the staff at Man vs. Food. Hey, way to go. In just a second, yeah, the Nobel Prize for Comedy this year goes to Jay Leno. Hey, way to go to all this year's winners. And now available at all Gander Mountain, Walmart, and Cenex stores, a new self-help booklet from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, because reading makes a country great. You might be a conspiracy theorist, wacko, nutcase, dumbass failure if you wonder what happened to the passengers on 9/11, if you wonder where was the plane at the Pentagon, if you wonder where was the plane in the plane crash at Shanksville. You might be a conspiracy theorist, wacko, nutcase, misfit, big fatty, if you wonder why Building 7 fell down, if you saw the North and South Towers go down and wonder if that's really how a falling building looks like when it falls down, if you wonder why President Bush did not want to investigate 9/11 and did not want to talk to the 9/11 Commission by himself, were they meeting in the dark with spiders? You might be a wacko, dumbass, failure, misfit, big fatty if you wonder why they have not shown us 1 million times on Chevy commercials and the Super Bowl halftime, the plane hitting the Pentagon, with the hundreds of cameras that were watching that building. If you wonder why the bin Laden family was flown out of the country quickly the next day, you might be a conspiracy theorist, wacko, nutcase, dumbass, failure, misfit, big fatty if you wonder why George Bush Sr., as a member of the Carlyle Group, was meeting with the brother of Osama bin Laden in a Washington, D.C. hotel on September 11th. If you wonder why Bill Clinton or Barack Obama are not the least bit interested in investigating 9/11. If you wonder why the Federal Emergency Management Team arrived in New York City on September 10th. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, reading makes a country great. And this portion of tonight's program is being brought to you by the Underpants Bomber, the DC Sniper, the Times Square Fizzler, and the Al-Qaeda Conclave Mosque Corn Palace of Mitchell, South Dakota. Hola is great. Wait, no, Allah is great and most awesome. How's it going? We are new to your country. We want to kill you and take your Wii Sports software. Our high-rise lairs are too, how you say it, more of dude caves and not too gnarly and not cool for bowling. For make benefit glorious nation of Kababistan. Death to Peyton Manning and NASCARs and WWF. We come from a very organized, well-kept, well-swept cave in the mountains of Afghanistan, far, far up in sheep nosebleed section. We did 9/11 and other things like the 93 World Trade Center bombing and the Beirut Marine Barracks bombing and for sure lots of other stuff that we did. We are not the FBI or the CIA, ha, that's for sure. And for sure you would be a silly person who does not fit in your neighborhood to think so. We have nothing to do with George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Bush, the senior one, who sits in the front row at the World Series with his pig-resembling wife, or Obama bin Laden, or Barack Obama. Thank you very much. Happy times. Have a good day, and please just stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real, and be always awesome. This program is being brought to you this week with the help of a grant from Walmart and the United States Department of Homeland Security. Remember, shoppers, Homeland Security begins with hometown security. If you see something in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity to, just a minute, I'll find someone, I'll be right back. Has someone helped you yet? I'll find someone, I'll be right back. Actually, I'm off in 2 minutes. No, I'll get someone, I'll be right back, okay? If you need help, ask a Walmart employee. They will provide assistance within 4 working days. Have you applied for one of our gift cards or store memberships? Welcome to Walmart. We're Walmart and the United States Department of Homeland Security. Thank you for shopping. And now I'd like to bring on our first guest, Tom Sterner. He's out in Redding, California. He began to sing with a fellow child prisoners in the West Denver Housing Project in the 60s. He spent the 70s and 80s howling his lyrics in rock and roll whiskey bars. He found passion and friction, the guttural growl of his Harley Davidson hog, and the monster men he rode with. Between prison and Big Brother deals, he watched them all disappear. This poor boy, mama was a Catholic, daddy was a drunk, has found his voice and lends it to a vision, a tomorrow when his children won't be goose-stepped and prodded into daddy boy money wars. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Fine, Mike. How are you?
Good, good. What's it like out in, I suppose you have perfect weather out there today, right?
Triple digits every day.
Well, I took a long time getting to you, so let's just get right to it. If you have some poems and if you'd like to go ahead and give us some background and just take it away, if that's okay with you.
Okay. I'm from Colorado and headed back there in a couple of years, married a lady here in Redding, and I'm here until her daughter graduates from high school. I'm going to start off with a few years ago I was invited to submit a piece for the KEO project, a time capsule to be launched into space scheduled to return in 50,000 years. I sent this piece along with a song my son and I wrote. It's called KEO, Legend of New Horse. I am much less than a weathered tome to your eyes. I've come to seek that which more than magic reveals, language, the texture of my skin, cloth spread crossed bony spar, a cobweb sail blown by the winds of time. What I have accomplished must occur 1,000 times more, each set of these 50 years of my existence. I see the hand of my grandson upon the hand of my son. Over 150 generations this eternal stack of hands will represent, a fine promise and hope of aeon. This message is a thin whisper to the younger, word secrets kissed into your ears. We aren't doing so well in this world of bombs and bullets we have made, our epithets of peace or else, the mad science of overkill. I hope you are there in spite of us, have learned something because of us, and are better still yet, one of us. I'm a man who dreams. It has even been suggested that I dream in color. I do so hope you have color and a host of dreams upon waking. To this end, I have penned a song whose tune my son's guitar has learned to sing. I have chosen to include the lyrics that its music might find your lips, for I know if you are of me, you will find a way to sing, Legend of New Horse. Mama told her first son, come sit down by my side. When everything is said and done, all you can do is try. Remember when you wonder which way and what to do. Sometimes only hunger will see a spirit through, and we're standing in a crosswind, bad moon bound to carry a legend on the rise. When you follow your heart, face the risk of breaking down, set yourself apart, awareness of the sound, the arch of earth and sky, peace angelic fall. Mama said, son, we can only fly when we're not above it all. Where winter makes its mark, what decades find lay claim, a howling voice of the dark, and new horse is its name. A pounding heart of age, tempered passion will, when it's time to turn the page, a destiny fulfill. Breathless fall from the womb, a four-point landing too. Maybe shake the mother spoon, find a path that's true. We are only what we are, a kick in fortune's ass. Honey, we may hold the stars, kiss the nights we pass. So there you have it. I keep a tenuous grip at best, so at odds am I to the time in which I have been born. I live near the mountains and share their breath, and my children, your next of kin. Be generous and good to one another. Look forward and not back. Most of what you may learn from us is how not to be. In history's stead, keep a good heart. Care about your young and old. Those in between will thrive in a circle of wellness. I like to think of myself as your father, for it is what I have come best to be, one who cares for children, sings when he gets the chance, and appreciates blessings of love when they occur. Remember always that your spirit resides within you. You are a living pagoda. No one can show you the way, yet you may close your eyes and wander unclothed in a snowfield to be kissed by gods. Be humble and proud, simply courageous. I promised myself I wouldn't preach when I penned this piece, yet it sounded just then as if I were. Listen, if you know me when this is found, come get me straight away. We will make a circle and pound our bare feet into the dust of our spiritual ground, howl the legend to the heavens, press our faces into the flesh of the new horse, and ride the hell away. That's it.
Tom?
Hello?
How you doing? Thank you very much.
All right. Is my time up?
No, it's not.
Oh, all right. I got something here from Reptiles and Dust.
Good.
This is 168 verses of just madness, but in some pastures, alfalfa, sweet scent of first love and the death of reason, weight of passion flower scent, rolling in the haymow, old men on road trips, roll down the window and dream. Trouble with politicians when their women demand new shoes, they are apt to ask what color, choose a nation, a people, make them enemy, steal their skin, walk first on, then in them. To hell with penny loafers. Then I have a bit of Quadlibet, which Michael did in his Omega series. Tallest tree, jungle, forest, get these bugs out of my brain. Our lives are a circus, three rings and less. Youth, Christ, we are old. These children's pajamas make us sleepy in time. Want to go back to that security and sincerity. Dark, safe place, the unknown, tucked in and hidden away. Monsters have eaten our sins, spread them fast on a breath of wind. This lamb slain, nonetheless, the first of God's children, laying a cordwood stack of lumber whose mother's tears anoint passion, fuel, flame of life. She howls and comes to know a legion of darker spaces, becomes powerless, afraid, closes her eyes and stares, imagines a spark, ignition, as if breath defines the flame. Broken, she stumbles away, irresolute in her denial. There are firstborn and those born first. Cemetery, by definition, seminary, this cursed lot, strive for understanding, theology, contrived primordial bent, no sweat in the blood of others, all hail and safe historian. What matters each to learn and teach, first at birth, died, and then example for those whom follow, quick step, ye new-made soul, breathe deep and get the hell out. Oblivion is the sorrow of crib death. This mother cries through the night whose old child has wandered away, imagines the wickedness of the road, fresh earth, a hole for hiding, knows peace may never revisit those vacant rooms of her soul, adrifting between madnesses. Those real voiced hounds of hell howl a lament of heaven denied, fresh flowers, a guttering flame, quick softening, a stone remembrance, finally extant, a laying down, all things considered in the hands of God. I still got time?
All right.
Okay. There is a sweet smell on the land. He offers a hand up, the lady steps down. A stone altar upon approaching, no hands they touching, and a sigh breaks the wind. passing through their bodies, fading back to back and faced alone. He laughs, the horses run away. She turns, the blink of an eye, it is night in the bed at home. She lays in the arms of shadows where strangers have been kissing her face, using her body for a meeting place.
Thank you, Tom.
Police cars pulling away, man children in the back seat, tied in, handcuffed, and caught with dangerous bits of contraband, rubber bands, paper clips, and pot. The cops look bored, yet properly grim and intent. This hyacinth root appears, tangle of earth and worm, as some grave reminder, safe from my spade, yet returned yet, that I might savor its scent, enjoy its death of flower. Whom seeks ends will necessarily be caught in the middle. Those whom reach will of necessity outreach themselves. There may never have been more than needs to acquire, yet fraught with human desire. We don't seek truth when a proof of lies better serves us. Language is a hanging of words, bleached and out to dry. What a man sees sets him apart, is fool enough not to be embarrassed. To know a person, one requires only a catalogue of fears. From these chosen are we made, our lives set on specific path, that we might learn this and refuse to manufacture chaos in our lives. It's highly unlikely. Are you
Hello,
still
Tom?
There?
Tom?
Yeah.
I'll have to stop you there. Next time you're on, along with your poetry, I was wondering if we could talk about, it seems like a lot of your poetry is driven by your childhood in Denver.
Yes.
And maybe along with your poetry next time, maybe we'll take some extra time to chat about that. Would that be all right with you?
That'd be great. Yeah, that's my. I just got an agent for my book, Mama's Rain, and that's what it's about, the first 10 years of my life in Denver.
Very cool. Can you want to plug a book or anything right here to close?
I just say you can go to wordwulf.com, WORDWULF, and my music and books and poetry is all there.
Yeah, I've been there. It's a cool website.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I figured out the nuts and bolts finally.
Very cool. Thank you, Tom. Have a good night now.
All right, Michael. Talk to you later.
Yep. See you later.
The New American Dream Radio.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
The New American Dream Radio Hour is also being brought to you by the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. Guess what? Terrorists did not do 9/11. There is no such thing as Al-Qaeda. It's all just the CIA. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are just for profit for the rich, and those who died on both sides, well, whatever. And this airport stuff is just to scare people and make them think the wars and the terrorists were, well, real and stuff. But hey, come here, come here. Hey, don't touch my wand, really, dude. But guess what? Come here. No, really. Come here. Come here. This is an awesome job. You ever wanted to? Well, you know, you see some awesome babe at Walmart or at the pool or in Big Food and you wish you could, well, you know, right there. And did you hear? They are going to start a Superfoods Security Administration. Dude, I would get my application in. Dude, this is a great job. I'm not going to college. I'm not going to have to work construction. I'm not going to have to be homeless or work at Sears. Oh, my God. This is a great job. I'd now like to welcome our next guest, special guest, Sherwood Ross. He joins us every month. He's our regular radio columnist for the New American Dream. He's a veteran journalist. He now directs the Anti-War News Service, and his reporting and commentaries on political and military topics appear on hundreds of internet sites globally. Hello, Sherwood.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
Good.
You're doing well. I thought tonight I'd read some poetry.
You go for it.
I'll go for it. Well, you know, I'm calling from the beautiful Virginia countryside, south of Washington, D.C. It's peaceful, prosperous, tranquil, untroubled. You know, as our current wars are fought overseas, most Americans hardly know there's a war on. And people here in Virginia are not threatened every day, and the battlefield is halfway around the world. Much of the fighting is done by hired hands from other countries, so there aren't a lot of casualties from this area. Well, this first poem, and I'm going to read three. This first poem is about a man who knows he should be more involved in the anti-war movement, but he isn't. It's also about the churches of America that are largely silent about stopping the war, even as they pray to the Prince of Peace. This poem is called Pray for Me, Father. Mine is the sin of cowardice, for I do not set myself on fire at the White House gate to protest murder. I am a glutton for God's blue sky. Pray for me, Father, for my tax dollars at a banquet for death, with napalm and daisy cutters and snake-like missiles that blow apart other men and their wives and children while I walk secure along the shore of the tranquil sea. Pray for me, Father, and I will pray for you. I will pray for a church that does not decry an inquisition, where men are broken and driven mad in the dungeons of Bagram, Kabul, Gitmo, and Abu Ghraib. A church of priests that recall Golgotha as if Jesus and Jesus and Jesus by the thousands are not being crucified now by the masters of war, are not shuffling home on artificial legs, are not staring sightless from wheelchairs in VA hospitals into God's blue sky. Pray for me, Father, and I will pray for you. This next poem is about the use of radioactive ammunition on the battlefield in the Middle East and the horrors it has produced. The poem centers on Iraqi mothers affected by the radioactivity, and some have given birth to deformed infants, while other infants have been stillborn. What's more, our own troops who fought in Iraq have also been affected, and some of their wives have given birth to deformed children. You know, the use of poison gas in World War I was horrible, but it would blow away after a few hours or a few days. This radioactivity is worse. It could make parts of Iraq unlivable for thousands of years and kill people over the centuries. The poem's called The Irradiated Desert. Come, it is past the time to start. You and I will lead the procession up the slope of this last passable road remaining out of here, out of this depression. We will wrap our cloaks against the night, against this Arabian desert cold, this angst. The fools, clowns, generals, and jesters will follow where we lead. Once we arrive, there will be time enough for their explaining. On to the irradiated deserts of earth, to the thousand-mile-wide rivers of sand, rivers that have no banks, rivers whose only vessels are rusted armored cars and eviscerated tanks, rivers whose only travelers are the bleached bones of their military drivers, drivers who died in their crawling coffins, whose deaths left their wives widows and their children orphans, drivers who drowned in the rivers of sand, rivers whose water now is turned to dust, red and brown as the rocky crusts of Mars, rivers whose gas flares spurt skyward in this black night like distant stars, rivers that water no crops, rivers robbed of all fruition, rivers of the invisible death of radioactive ammunition. The hospitals of Baghdad have never known such grief. Death has stolen the souls of their children. Death, our God, our viceroy, and our thief. Children still born, grotesque and deformed. Infants born dead with one eye, with internal organs hanging out, or with no eyes in their face. Such is our victory. Such is our disgrace. We who are hollow. We who made a civilization and despoiled it. We who defiled it, we who destroyed it, let us go forward and make our confession. Come, you and I will lead the procession. This last poem is called Russia and Argentina, and it's about how countries mistreat their people. In a sense, it's a hopeful poem in that the two countries named got rid of the worst aspects of totalitarian rule. I wrote it recalling a poem by the great modern Russian poet Yevgeny Yevtushenko. Yevtushenko was in Siberia working on a power plant, and he wrote a poem about what some of the workers did after they got off work each night. I first read this poem a few months ago at a poetry open mic, sponsored by the English department at the University of Miami. It's called Russia and Argentina. Yevgeny Yevtushenko, I read your night of poetry poem, and I am awed. I sleep with pens and a yellow legal pad beside my bed, yet nothing so wonderful day or night pops into my head as the poetry you and your friends read around the campfire on the banks of the Blue River running deep in the woods of Siberia, in the dark night under stars hanging down big as lanterns over Bratsk, where you have built the immense power plant. For the first time in my life, I long to be a Russian. It's more than the way you describe your beautiful country. It's your love of life that I admire, the intensity of your feeling, your poetry, your music, your animated conversation, each person reading his or her own verse while the thick soup cooks in the kettle over the open fire, while vodka disappears down burning throats, while the show-offs dance kicking up their boots, while women offer their delicious mouths in the woods, and Serenka, your accordion player, squeezes out a tango from the distant Argentine. Ah, the Argentine. Can it be as beautiful as your Bratsk? In a few hours, the Argentine will be under its own starry sky. Yes, under this same fat yellow moon, climbing up the wall of the horizon like a great clock, honoring the hours of the night. Is someone there in Cordoba on the Pampas picking up a Spanish guitar and softly, sweetly playing Moscow Nights in answer to your tango on the other side of the world? Do I hear Juan Gelman reading his poetry, reading from unthinkable tenderness? Yes, and it is the same Juan Gelman whose family fled Russia during the revolution to find sanctuary in Argentina, only years later to have the Argentine generals in their dirty war against the people arrest Gelman's young son and wife and murder them both, just as Stalin arbitrarily sent both of Yevtushenko's grandfathers to the gulag. Explain it to me. Tell me, I do not understand. Is there no government that will let its people live in peace? Listen, friends, pick up your ears. Listen to the wind rising, for the wind carries the voices of the poets forever around the curve of the earth in oratorical orbit. Hear the two poetic voices calling out across the ocean, from Russia, from Argentina, as with one voice. Love one another. Only love one another. Well, that's it for tonight. To comment or contribute to my anti-war news service, email SherwoodRoss10@gmail.com. That's SherwoodRoss10@gmail.com. Good night to every one of you. Peace.
Thank you very much, Sherwood.
You're very welcome, Mike. Have a good night.
You bet. See you later.
Tonight's program is proudly sponsored by the folks at Body Bag Underarm Deodorant. You can smell some of the people all of the time, and you can smell all of the people some of the time, but you'll never smell any dead people any of the time with Body Bag. As long as the American population remains proud that their relatives serve as cannon fodder for the military-industrial complex, there will be body bags in stick and spray. One has to be quite naive to accept the false glory bestowed on dead troops who died for nothing, for phony wars based on lies, but that's where the money is. And so there's Body Bag, a division of Martin Marietta, thick enough to cover the dead. This program brought to you also by Timeshares of Nebraska. Want to share time with real Nebraskans in a double-wide trailer, house nestled on the muddy shores of the Platte River? Want to watch crickets dig in the sand? Sit with your toes in the leavings of the neighborhood pit bull, clutching a warm brew in your hand, your back sticking to the lawn chair you found in the laundry room when you moved in? Just relax, find an extension cord long enough, flip on the radio and listen to the ball game. Maybe crank it a little louder to get over the sound of the Hardee's drive-in in the background, and listen to the hum of Offutt Air Force Base, command and control center of all our nuclear weapons, and know that someday these good old Huskers are just going to get her done. They're going to sit back and blow the world away. With a duct tape, channel changer, and the coat hanger on the metal roof attached to the American flag and MTV. Go Big Red. We're Timeshares of Nebraska Incorporated, and we live somewhere else. Maybe you will be the next American Idiot. Auditions for American Idiot 2012 are being conducted next Saturday in room 203, the high school history classroom. You can study for the competition by reading the local high school history textbook, copies available at the front desk up to the day of auditions. You may also prepare by watching the nightly news, the Today Show, Fox News, or by listening to National Public Radio. Winners of local competitions will advance to the regional finals in either Waco, Oklahoma City, Memphis, Los Angeles, Eveleth, Minnesota, New York City, and Washington, D.C. The finals will be held at Dealey Plaza in Dallas. The winner of the Next American Idiot competition will be buried at sea on national television live, sponsored by Coca-Cola. Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. It's been hot. We had 4th of July with the parade and ice cream and fireworks. We lay on the sofa watching a ball game, the channel changer precariously perched in our drooping hands as we phased in and out of consciousness. The parade was the big thing. Everybody points toward it. It's something to do. It's expected. It's the point in the year where we can say afterward that we can't believe how fast the summer has gone. A toehold, a place to push off from and get on with the rest of the year. For Michael M., the hometown Liberty man who used to work at a group home but was recently imprisoned in the county detention center because of crashing his moped into the war memorial in City Park, well, he's had quite a time. He just wants to get signed up for the home helper show coming to town so maybe he can get his house fixed up and make his wife and kids happy forever. He's now known as the big evil one around town, but either he doesn't know or he doesn't care. He escaped from Gitmo's by bribing the guards with two buttons, a shiny rock, and a tooth that could have been from a deer or maybe a coyote, maybe a cat. But then he got recaptured by the grain elevator manager when he showed up at their house for water. He was the red-haired guy in the big black BJ that Michael M. bounced off of after swerving to miss his little daughter in the road and then cracked off a piece of the war memorial and got hauled out by helicopter to Gitmo's dairy and detention farm. Well, let's see, the parade. What happened at the parade? The rapture whistle at the community center howled, along with the sirens of six police cruisers and the horns of a long line of red and yellow fire department trucks of varied sizes and shapes. The Liberty 4th of July parade was led by elderly veterans of the great killing of the Japs and Krauts, the massacre of Indian women and children, the murder of Iraq, as well as the people's most honorable and justified crucifixion of the men, women, and children of Afghanistan. They limped along, toting sun god flags and wind god flags and rain god flags and ground god flags, dragging along the street skulls of young Mexican men caught trying to sneak into the country to find a job. The crowd lounging on the grass yawned and scratched themselves and smelled under each other's underarms for telltale signs of body odor. The crowd rose as the color guard passed their area and sat just as quickly. The people covered the lawns with colored plastic chairs and coolers and short pants. They watched the high school band march by and the Liberty Insurance Company float. Car racing sounds hung in the air, zooms and rooms and tires from the stock car races being held out in the fairgrounds. In front of the library, on the sidewalk, an eating contest was ongoing with television sets and sofas set up. Along chugged the Dairy Queen and her court float, the Hardware Queen and her attendants, the Rodeo Queen, Soybean Queen, Ham Fat Princess, and finally the Ethanol Royalty. Mr. and Mrs. Mayor Buck Snort sat with great posture high atop the back seat of a cherry red Cadillac. They wore casual camouflage and tossed white terror whistles to the children running in packs alongside. Their dog Spot sat proudly in the front seat with the driver, ears waving in the breeze. Well, next came the Democratic Party float, a bright red pickup adorned with red, white, and blue ribbons and bows. In the back, propped up by sparkling, tight bales of straw and sun god flags, stood the cardboard cutout candidate. Signs made of colored poster board and markers on the sides of the pickup said, "Daytime lawn watering, it's about time. Library fines for the rich and the poor. Pro corn, pro soybeans." The cutout wore camo, smiled, and waved. During a gap in the lineup, boys dashed back and forth across the street, followed closely by dogs and little sisters. A roar, a howl, rolled down the street. Folks up by the Freedom Fizz balloon stand, run by the Daughters of the Rape of the Philippines, could see down toward the park corner that people were standing and pointing, yelling, throwing things at the next float. A flock of out of breath, shirtless fourth grade boys ran up to the balloon lady. They grabbed their knees and held their mouths open, unable to talk. They pointed toward the large golden balloons for $1. As the woman filled, they were able to finally blurt out, "Big evil, one, asshole." They pointed, "M," they said as one, "M?" The woman put her hands to her cheeks and dropped one of the balloons on her shoes, cursed to herself, then hurried to fill the rest. The boys collected their rubber bombs and ran down the hill toward the Liberty Elevator entry headed their way. The float, a wagon covered with hundreds of crumpled sun god napkins, was being pulled by a freshly waxed, brand-new, pitch-black, shiny Chevrolet BJ Hummer, driven by the big red-haired manager of the elevator with his wife in the passenger side, waving and tossing "Be Afraid" cards to the kids, with black-and-white photos of Dougs, homos, and people who don't seem to have much to say. On the wagon was a large kennel cage, and inside, gripping the bar, stood M, wearing the uniform rose-white panties from Gitmo's and no shirt or shoes, holding a black hood in his hand, which was really a spray-painted seed cord sack. The floor of the cage was littered with bones, a charred sun god flag, and ripped Bible pages. The little girl in her white dress sat on her bicycle outside the cage, and every once in a while, M reached through the bars as if trying to grab her. The girl would put her hands on her face and squeal, "Oh my," in the pretty little girl's voice that was everything about freedom and liberty and worshiping wherever you want. Stuffed into one of her white rose-flowered socks was a $10 bill that her father said was for ice cream for M and her after the parade. "Evil," shouted one older lady in a wide flowered straw hat, putting her hand to her mouth. She leaned forward in her pink plastic chair. "Asshole." Her neighbor stood and waved her hand and flabby arm fat at M. "We are so free," yelled an eighth grade girl eating a baby cow sandwich. "I know, it's so awesome," said her friend. The crowd on both sides roared with laughter as a policeman walked into the middle of the road to officiously put up a hand to make the big red-haired man halt his Hummer BJ. Then a small pumper truck pulled up next to M's cage, and a fireman sprayed M with a stiff, hard stream. Then the boys with the bombs walked up and fired at M's cage. Two missed completely. One broke on a bar, and the contents of Freedom Fizz, gathered from the city pool filtration system over the course of the summer, splattered M. The last one hit M square in the face while he was rubbing his eyes. The float behind M in the elevator, a large papier-mâché Ten Commandments tablet for the Sun God Summer Bible Camp, backed up 10 feet to get out of range. Shaking his head and laughing, leaning over, holding his gut, the policeman stepped to the side and waved the Liberty elevator float on. M stood in the middle of his cage, rubbing his eyes with his fists, trying not to fall as the pickup pulled away. He stumbled, caught himself, and fell back, flat on his back, on the wood flooring of the wagon. He rolled to his side, sweat and freedom fizz running down his forehead and nose into his mouth. He licked his upper lip and looked into the blue eyes of his own little girl in the arms of his wife standing on the curb. M's son clutched his mother's leg. All three stared at M with closed mouths. M looked back and then waved. His daughter waved. They watched each other as the float rolled off down the street. M fought to get to his feet, struggling to climb up the slippery bars. On his knees, he yelled to his wife, "I'm getting us signed up for the home helper show. We'll get a new deck, a screened porch." He kept his eyes on his wife until she turned and melted into the crowd. And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average. I'd like to say thank you to Len Osanek for his help as being a producer of the show, and I want to reiterate again that the show has been picked up by Radio Free Nashville. That'll start sometime soon. I'd also like to say our thoughts are with you to Chuck Gregory in Fort Lauderdale, who could not be with us today because of the death of a friend. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, Rock Creek Free Press. They make this all possible. And I'd like to thank all the people who take time to tune in. I'd like to thank all the people who send me letters to my emails. Some of them say they don't want to hear it again, but some of them are very nice, and I do appreciate that. We send the email out twice a week to try and let people know about the show. So good night to everybody, and next week we'll have Chuck Gregory back, I'm sure. So good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.